It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Tim Lust, National Sorghum Producers. That's coming up in just a moment. First off, Allison Rivera's with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and understands firsthand the importance of helping to educate members' staff.
Half of what we spend our time here at NCBA doing, not just educating members on the priorities that our members have for this farm bill, but just educating members on what a farm bill is, educating their staff. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, Tony, I was one of those staffers working on a farm bill on the Hill and didn't know all the ins and outs or all the different groups that would come knocking on the door with requests in a farm bill. And it's important that NCBA gets in there and lets these members of Congress know why a farm bill is important and why we've got to get it across the finish line.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Tim Lust. Tim is the CEO of the National Sorghum Producers, headquartered in Lubbock. And Tim, let's quickly talk about NSP. That's the acronym for National Sorghum Producers. But for those who don't know, what's the elevator speech for who NSP is?
Trade association founded in 1955 to help producers with legislative and regulatory issues, and remain very focused on that mission and helping our grower members in all aspects of legislative and regulatory policy.
And you've actually been around the sorghum industry for a while. As some may know, NSP at one time was known as the National Grain Sorghum Producers, and the transition to NSP to really bring in more than just grain. How long with the organization?
30 years this month.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Let's look at 23, and I don't think we've got all of the acres harvested. Hopefully, we're pretty close at this point. But how would you recap 2023?
Well, depends on where you were. Broke all sorts of records in the Gulf Coast of Texas and South Texas on sorghum yields, and just a phenomenal crop down there. As you went north, obviously, like a lot of the rest of the country, we had such great potential. If you would ask me this, if you had done this interview July 4th, I'd have probably told you we would break a national yield record. And then it never rained again. End up with a slightly below average crop that had a lot of potential. Certainly that's on the grain side. We started this interview talking about the reason why we took grain out of our name. Tremendous growth in sorghum silage acres from Texas Panhandle all the way up into Kansas, and then frankly all over the United States from coast to coast, from California to New York. Sorghum silage just continues to grow, and pretty solid crop on the sorghum silage side. All things considered, how dry it was, a pretty good crop there.
So it's one thing to talk about the production side of this, but we also have to think about who's buying it at this point. So domestic demand, and then let's look at the export side.
So pretty consistent. Ethanol industry continues to buy as prices allow. Certainly, as we got further into harvest, prices didn't allow as China really came in very strongly again and ran sorghum prices up over corn in most of the country. So continue to see very strong pull from China. Even with some slowdowns and some challenges in China, they have still been a very strong buyer of U.S. sorghum.
2024, and maybe start with the demand side of what we're expecting in 24, because that will probably set the stage for what we would put in the ground. Is that a safe way to look at it?
That's generally where it starts. I think from a macro standpoint, certainly, all farmers in America are kind of wondering about that. Where is that demand worldwide? And it's a little soft from a macro standpoint, probably. But from a micro standpoint, we continue to see very strong pull for sorghum and demand there. Excited about that. I think, what's that translate into? Well, it translates into the fact that South Texas is already got to make planting decisions because they're 30, 40 days away from putting sorghum in the ground there. So, you know, we expect very strong acreage in South Texas and up through the coastal bend this year. A little too early to kind of get a feel on the rest of the plains. A lot of, you know, actually just talked to one of my dad's renters yesterday and kind of up in the air, not sure what direction headed with the crop mix. So still a little early in terms of that, but certainly I think it is solid. Maybe even better.
And what about overcoming some of the challenges with growing sorghum? I mean, I was thinking back, it's been not quite 20 years that we were talking about over-the-top grass control in sorghum and some of the other problems that you knew solutions were there. As you look back over the last 30 years, have we come a long way?
You know, we have. It was slow on the front end. There's no doubt about it. But it'll be really interesting in 2024. Just to your point, how many of those total acres have over the top grass control? Because we know it will be more than 23, and we know 23 was more than 22, and we continue to see that market grow. But it'll be really interesting to see what percentage of the 24 crop ends up being over the top grass control.
Okay. 23, you've already mentioned, we thought it was a grand slam, and at this point maybe it's a base hit. But when we look at 2022, we had some similar disasters, if you would. Program called the ERP from USDA. It's funny that we're not funny, but it's ironic that we're talking about frustrations and disasters in 23, yet producers still don't have 22 taken care of yet.
You know, certainly when we look back, 22 was the worst year since 1960 for the sorghum industry. So it was a particularly challenging and bad year for the sorghum industry. And so with the passage of the 22 ERP with Congress, we felt good about that. Knew it wasn't maybe as many dollars as it could have been, but certainly there were a lot of dollars there that were going to go. And, you know, then after implementation, when we look at what our actual membership received based upon the, you know, horrific, 70-year loss, 60-year loss type scenario that they had, very disappointing, probably the most disappointing implementation of any program in my career. And so, you know, not sure what all the solutions are there. Not sure if it's over. Certainly one of those that, from our grower standpoint, you know, there are all sorts of reasons have been given, but it's sure hard to explain to our members, when they had that sort of record loss, and they have those few resources going towards that.
Well, is it also a challenge to maybe predict what we'll see in 24? We already know no 23 farm bill, so we're going to push that into next year. Is there a possibility we'll be talking about a 25 farm bill instead of even a 24?
You know, there are some legitimate reasons why getting it done in 24 probably makes a lot of sense. But as we have seen the last year, margins are incredibly close, and there is a vast differences on Capitol Hill. And so there's a lot of challenges. You know, it's an election year on top of that, so we know that there's a period of 2024 that nothing significant will happen. So, you know, I think you still expect a lot of action here in the spring of 24 and hopefully the ability to wrap that up in a lame duck late in the year. You know, trying to outguess and outpredict Congress right now, I think you might be better off just to go to Vegas and take your chances right now. So being around enough years for a person that should have an opinion on this, I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I think that's what's the wisest decision probably is there.
Well, sometimes we say it would take an act of Congress for this to happen, and that's becoming a pretty good saying on a lot of different things. But when it comes to, and I want to go back to exports for just a moment and tie it back into weather. Mississippi River, we've had some challenges with low levels. They're expecting to see those levels come up in 24. But for sorghum, Don't you export for the most part out of the Gulf and then rely on something known as the Panama Canal?
We do, or at least we used to. And so, no, I think, you know, logistics and transportation has always been and will always be a huge issue. But from a U.S. competitiveness standpoint, you know, we've always relied on the Panama Canal for a lot of that, and certainly those backups and delays and challenges, and, you know, predicted to maybe even get worse over the next few months. So something that you constantly have to work at and look at for a lot of reasons. You know, we talk about how, reasons why sorghum doesn't normally go to the PNW, but it can. And, you know, those are things that, you know, could come back into play that you look at. If there's enough premium there to from a freight standpoint, well, you know, we can pull grain that way, but it's a lot more challenging. It's the normal flow is to go to the Texas Gulf and be loaded out of the Texas Gulf. So something, just one other item that we'll constantly have to monitor and look at and watch this year.
And we don't normally talk about necessarily rail, but one of your biggest buyers in the past has been Mexico. Anything going on right now with Mexico? I know we've seen about rail closures, and maybe we're reopened now everywhere, but is that something to keep an eye on?
You know, for a lot of ours, you know, a lot of our sorghum that goes to Mexico actually goes by truck out of South Texas, so not as big an issue as the rail closures further west and the impact on distillers' grain and corn. But certainly, it's just one more example of the fact that normal business is something that is assumed, but it certainly doesn't always happen. And this is just another example of that with what we've seen the last few weeks there.
Well, let's hope 24 is that Grand Slam year. You all for that?
We are all for that. We know we have a lot of farmers that are really looking towards a good production year. And, you know, a lot of generation, my son's age, that have came in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and, you know, their dads told them after the first year, well, it's a tough year, but it, you know, year like this, you'll be fine. And now you know what it's like. And after about 5 or 6 of those, they're getting pretty tired of it. And so there's a lot of reasons why we need to see some good weather patterns across the plains this year in 2024.
Tim, so good to see you. Wish you the best.
Thank you, Tony.
Tim Lust is CEO of the National Sorghum Producers, headquartered in Lubbock. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest, Tim Lust, National Sorghum Producers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, follow the national sorghum producers online, sorghumgrowers.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Members of the biofuel and ag sectors are applauding a recent guidance announcement from the U.S. Treasury Department and Internal Revenue Service, which in essence creates a credit for production of sustainable aviation fuels. Paul Winters of Clean Fuels Alliance America talks about the economic potential.
The process for making renewable diesel can be upgraded to make sustainable aviation fuel from the same feedstocks, the same soybean oil, canola oil, recycled animal fats, used cooking oil. A lot of our industry is looking to make investments to upgrade facilities and begin production of sustainable aviation fuel.
Jeff Cooper of the Renewable Fuels Association notes the connection between the credit and eligible fuels as defined by the Environmental Protection Agency's Renewable Fuel Standard.
Those RFS levels are really helping to drive growth in higher level blends of ethanol and really creating interest and new opportunities around new fuels from ethanol, things like sustainable aviation fuel, which would qualify for the RFS.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.